Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It is Monday, June 30th, and we have a great conversation ahead of us talking about fatherlessness, talking about this almost epidemic of a fatherless generation growing up in America. We're going to talk about that with Carrie Casey at the National Center for Fathering in just a little bit. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. To find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, go to our website, kfuo.org. Look for the sponsor section there. You'll find the CUW logo. Click on that. That'll take you to the Concordia University, Wisconsin webpage. You can find out more about them there. Go check it out. Well, as promised, our guest today, Carrie Casey. He's the CEO of the National Center for Fathering. Welcome to Faith and Family, Carrie.
I'm happy to be with you. Thank you for having me on.
This is such an important topic, and I look forward to getting into this conversation. Before we get too far into the conversation about fatherlessness, tell us about yourself and the National Center for Fathering.
Oh, I'm very honored to be the CEO, as you stated, but I share oftentimes CEO is Chief Encouragement Officer. So I'm privileged to be married to my bride, Melanie, of 37 years. I met her in geography class at a pretty good basketball school. I played football at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. But I'm glad I went to geography class, and now we're blessed with three grown children. We kept having fun. Now we have Chance. He's 17. And we have nine grandchildren, believe it or not. We had two born in the past 2 months. And so we have five granddaughters and four grandsons. And I'm living out my dream, but I didn't know it would be this busy or this hard. But we have a great opportunity.
Well, congratulations. That is just outstanding. Two grandchildren in the last 2 months. That's exciting.
Oh, yes. They are really drinking the water. Their mother has done a great job. She is a second grade teacher, and she's very structured, and she has a gift of hospitality. So when the grandchildren are there, everything's in line. I just do what they tell me to do.
Well, tell us about the National Center for Fathering. What's the history behind this?
Oh, we're just really proud to be CEO here. I've been CEO for 8 years. We've been around for 24 years. 2015, it would be our 25th year of opportunity here helping fathers. And we inspire and equip fathers to be involved in their children's lives. And we don't like it to be didactic or negative or dads are deadbeat. Sometimes they're just dead broke dads. But we want to improve the lives of children and establish a positive fathering and family legacy. That's what we're really about, Andy, and, you know, to impact future generations. And as I stated, inspiring and equipping, in that every child needs a father, grandfather, or father figure. When they have that, they not only they thrive. They're not just surviving, if you will, but they can thrive. And so, you know, we want every child to have an actively engaged father or father figure in their lives. And so we have the tools, the resources, the research. Really, it's four ways to do it, through the research, the resources, the training, and the program. So we want dads to know that they can get in the game.
Well, let's start with the research. Let's start with let's begin with fathers. What is the role of a father? What is a father? Who is a father? What does a father do?
Well, quite naturally, you have male and female. And so then you have the male, he's the father. The female is the mother, if you will. And so we have different bents. We have different, genetics, as far as that's concerned. And so there are certain talents and abilities that a father has that a mother does not have. And we're not belittling mothers in any way. But the best case scenario is to have a father and a mother to raise the child. But it is a crisis in this world today, Andy, even in 2014, and we're talking about currently 25 million children. That's 33% of the children in this country live apart, Andy, from their biological father. In urban communities, 75% of all children born since 1975 will live some portion of their formative years with only one parent. Now, Andy, when that takes place, thinking about the 25 million, children are more likely to be poor, more likely to drop out of school, more likely to be involved in crime. Girls are more likely to be pregnant as a teenager. Now, if a dad, no perfect dads, by the way, there are no perfect dads. I'm not perfect. My daddy wasn't perfect. He was there for me. But by a dad just being there, those statistics flip-flop, believe it or not.
Well, 25 million children, that's, what, a third of the children in this country presently?
Well, you're talking about, 33% of the children, as I stated, will live apart from their biological father. So we can come up, we have all of the research. You can go to our website, www.fathers.com, and look on research, and you will have you will see statistics that are very startling. But we're very excited because we know the solution. We can talk about health care, education, and economics in the country. We can argue, scream at Congress and all of that. But Congress cannot do what the on-the-ground troops can do, and that is with the family, with fathers, with children. And as we play our roles, just like a team, when you play your position, stay in your lane, you have a better chance of winning a championship. That's how the St. Louis Rams will win this year, when they stay in their lanes and play their position and do it well.
So with nearly a third of the children in this country living apart from their biological father, and then when we look at urban communities, that number goes up, doesn't it?
Oh, it's unbelievable. When I was I'm 58 years of age. I'm a father, a grandfather. I'm an African-American male, believe it or not. But when it gets down to it, in 1960, when I was 5 years old, African-American babies born out of wedlock, you're talking 25 to 30% at the most. What do you think it is today? Listen to me. 72% or higher. And so no culture, I don't care what race it is, we got black, white, Hispanic, Vietnamese, or whatever, Native American, it hurts the whole culture. So what affects one culture indirectly, or race, if you will, affects all others directly, if you will. I mean, what affects one directly affects all others indirectly. So this problem that we have, we can't sit here and say, well, that's their problem. All of our problems. So men, fathers, we need to step up our game. Mothers, same way. But we have to come together if we're really going to deal with the economics, the health care, if a kid's going to be educated. Yesterday, I was sitting at home. Well, I wasn't just sitting. A lot of the grandbabies were there yesterday. We were celebrating one of the grandbabies' mother's birthday. But as you look at the children, their frontal lobe and the way that they develop in everything when they have mom and dad, when they are secure, when they have discipline, when they have that love and that care, that child would develop mentally, physically, and spiritually in a better way. And we won't have to pay a lot of money economically in America dealing with a lot of social evils that take place when a dad and a mom are not there for the child.
Well, you mentioned some of the consequences that quite often are associated with children who grow up without a father or a father figure. Crime being one of them. What is there a correlation? I mean, in the research that you're doing at the National Center for Fathering, how are these consequences related to fatherlessness?
Well, quite naturally, as we state, we do the research, and one of the reasons we do it is not just to be perceived smart or whatever, but we do the research so people can see the data. People are saying, well, you're saying this stuff, but show me the pie. Show me what's going on, the proof in the pudding. And so I love it because we don't just have to talk about it. People can sit in the privacy of their home or their room or their office or whatever, look at the data, and you can see it, and it's the truth. And other people, there are boatloads of research out there. Everybody, you have to say the same thing because it's the truth. And so daddies are so important. It's just like a baby being born. You cannot have a baby unless you have the ingredients of what comes through a father into a mother to make a baby. And many times people say, well, you don't really need a dad. Well, a dad doesn't need to be involved in a kid's education. Well, a dad doesn't need to catch ball with the kid. Well, a dad doesn't need to be there to affirm a daughter. But believe it or not, our research with a girl, thinking about it, a dad just being in the home, Andy, just being in the home, not perfect, not real bright. He could be like me. But when the daddy's there, the girl is more secure. She's more confident. Research shows that she will probably do better in math. And not only that, she will probably marry a guy with similar facial features as her father. Research shows that. Now, that's kind of scary when you look at guys like you and me. But anyway, but it is a fact.
That's why I work in radio.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But you do well. I saw your picture on your bio. You're a handsome young man. By the way, congratulations to you. I understand you're expecting your first child.
I need to update my bio. We have a... That bio's a little old. We have a wonderful boy. We have little Oscar, who's almost 10 months old now.
Is he really?
Yeah, and he's just a joy.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Thanks. Yeah, and that's why this topic is so important to me. Some of the things that happen when that come about as a result of a father not being present or a father figure not being present are just frightening. You mentioned when a girl growing up has a father or father figure, she is more confident, more secure, more likely to do better in math.
Yeah.
How interesting is that?
That's amazing. And I think about it, guys, they can almost many times spot a young lady that does not have an engaged father, grandfather, or father figure in her life. It's almost like they're left unprotected. Now, some people that are listening may say, well, why you need a man to protect a woman? And so our culture has gone south to a degree. But it is a fact. There are various roles. I mean, my children and grandchildren would not want me to prepare that birthday dinner yesterday the way my bride did. She's better at it. And it's not just saying all women need to cook or be in the kitchen. I'm not saying that. Guys can cook well and all of that. But you do have to recognize, as Clint Eastwood would say, a man's got to recognize his have to understand his limitations. And so there are certain things that a woman and a mother can do that a man cannot do. There's certain support that a man needs or a father needs from a mother, that child's mother. And so as my bride and I, my bride of 37 years, as we work within our roles, our positions, and our titles and all of that, we do much better. And we recognize the gifts and skills that each one has. Two are better than one. Can't win a championship by yourself. If the Rams think they're going to win this year, if the Cardinals think they're going to win, the reason why the Cardinals do so well is they do play their positions, they play as a team, and that's why they're pretty consistent. It has to happen in the way of family. And even when you talk about gangs and all the evils that are in the world, gangs are bad and all of that, if gangs are so bad, why are kids running to them? Why? They're looking for family, and they're working as a family structure. We will take care of you. We will protect you. We will support you. And so they are literally taking the place sometimes of family. But the way that they live, that is not the best way to live. It's a dangerous lifestyle, quite naturally. But the real family is supposed to be their father, their mother, and that dad adds, provides. He protects. I walk through the house the last one of the day to check the doors, turn the lights out, that type of thing. Add the security of just doing those things. Now, my son is 17. He's taller than me. He's quicker than me now. I'm 58. I used to play ball, but I'm not as fast. So if something happened, he would probably have to wrestle with an intruder more than I would. But it is a fact. As a dad, though, I just do my, as they would say, priestly role, leadership role, just checking things that a 17-year-old would not look for. He would leave the garage light on. He would leave the door open sometimes. Mm-hmm. That's what 17-year-olds do. They have the right to forget, not to have a clue, to have a knuckle, be a knucklehead sometimes. But as a 58-year-old, I do not have that option.
Sure, that as a 17-year-old, you have something to aspire to, and yeah. And we always have, you know, we can always, we always, as you said, none of us are perfect, and so we certainly always have opportunities to learn and to grow and to do something better. Yeah, mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier, you were talking about, you know, mothers have certain gifts, fathers have certain gifts, and both are important. You know, each have different vocations is what we use around here at right. on Faith and Family. And what about the father who says, well, you know, I'm just not gifted in spending time with children or playing games or doing these things that most people would do with children. I just don't have the gifts to do that. What right. about the father who you know, if, for lack of a better word, is just not interested, just not engaged, is emotionally absent?
Well, when it really gets down to it, if we're going to make this country great, if we're going to make our state great, if we're going to make our city great, if we're going to make our block great, we all have to engage with the abilities we have.
Mm-hmm.
And so if a daddy does that, he must recognize that he is not doing his best. He should not expect America to be great. He should not expect his neighborhood to be great. He should not expect people to really care about him. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And so you don't have to be the best and the brightest. It's just like we're working now when daddies leave the hospital with that mother, with that new baby, to give them resources that can help them to bloom and blossom in their roles. And all of us must do that. We can use excuses. Well, I'm tired. Well, I'm not good mm-hmm. enough. Well, I'm not gifted enough. And all of that. But it is a fact we can offer something. And I don't care if you're El Nerdo like me, and my children make fun of me how I pull up my pants up really high. I wear lace-up shoes all the time and all of this. And I read, and I love history and all this. And I don't look like I used to when I played ball, and I look like El Nerdo. But believe it or not, they would not want anybody else to be their daddy but me. Your son of 10 months, he knows your voice. He knows your smell. He knows how he feels around you, and you are his dad. He can detect with his eyes closed when his daddy's near to him because of the familiarity, if you will. So we can't buy into the lie of saying, I'm not a good dad. Well, I don't have enough money. Well, I didn't play football. Well, I don't have a big job and a big title. Children don't care about the title. They want to know you have a testimony, that you are going to love them and be there for them. And we have some thoughts, even as we go through our interview here, of what the solution is to all of what we're going through.
Absolutely. And we'll get to that, the solution, and how do we, well, we'll talk about championship fathering, as mm-hmm. as you all have coined it there at the National Center for Fathering. One more question about the situation, the circumstances. How has our culture gotten to this point? How has our culture devolved to the point of not really valuing fathers? I mean, you know, looking those statistics, a third of the children in the country presently, three quarters almost of the children in urban communities are living without their biological father present, or at least for a portion of their formative years. No father present.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that we've gotten to this point in our culture that we don't value fathers in the way that they need to be valued? Because, I mean, obviously, when there aren't fathers present, what we see are the things you mentioned earlier: crime, teen pregnancy, poverty, school dropouts. All those things happen when fathers are absent.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just the fact, Andy, that we all have various gifts and talents and abilities, intellectually, you know, spiritually, all of this. But I believe we have gotten away from running the base plays, the fundamental plays, if you will. There's a way you bake a cake. There's a way that you prepare food. There's a way that you mow your yard. There's a way that you go to work. There's a way that you play and things of this nature. But if you do not do the fundamentals of the base things that you do when you get up in the morning, and please forgive me if I sound very elementary, but you brush your teeth in the morning, you take a shower, various things like this. Mm-hmm. If you get away from that or whatever, then eventually you're not successful. And I talk about sports a lot. In the Los Angeles Rams and every sports team, basketball, football, baseball, soccer, you name it, cricket, there are basic fundamentals that you must be about if you're going to have even a chance to win. So I believe our culture has, over the years, has eroded to a degree because we think, well, what's the big deal about getting married? If I want to have sex, we can just go ahead and have sex. Now, that's legal. You can go ahead and do it. But it is a fact, through that union, when you come together and do what married people are legally able to do and can do, but you can't do things like married people do and expect to receive the blessings and mm-hmm. the benefits of that. You must, in fact, there is a roadmap, there is a game plan, there is a playbook. And so we've gotten away from it. Well, mothers, some of them, I don't really like him, and so I'm going to raise this baby on my own. Well, if that's the case, why do you get with him? I mean, when you go through the opportunity of procreation, if you will, having sex, but saying we don't need to be married. And I don't want to get off track or be too long. Please forgive me. But it is a fact of when we say we don't need to be married, or we don't need to spend time together, or we don't need to learn from one another, or I can be the man and the woman, or I can be the man and raise my children without that woman. It isn't always where the man's leaving.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes women say, I don't want to be a mother, I don't want to be married, and they leave. There are various things. Then there are opportunities where a father may die mm-hmm. in things. It isn't just through divorce.
Sure.
It isn't just through out of wedlock pregnancies and things of this nature. But there are times people commit a crime or something and they're in prison.
Mm-hmm.
There are guys that are in prison that sometimes might be a better dad than a dad that's in the home mm-hmm. because they are, sometimes they might be able to text, they're able to write letters, they're able to communicate through the computer, if you will, and to let that child know that I made a mistake and that I love you. I wish I could be there. I'm going to work my hardest to get out of here and to be with you. There are many scenarios. There are health problems and things where a dad is sick and they're handicapped or in a hospital, and it's just different ways where you're not there or you can't perform some of the duties that you would like to as a father. But there are a lot of things that have gone against us. But overall, culture-wise, some fathers, Andy, didn't get a good model themselves. They didn't start out right. And so we want to encourage dads, don't give up. Don't quit. Stay in the game. You can really do it. And you don't have to be great to do it. You don't have to have the name hero to be a wonderful dad. And my children give me great grace because I'm CEO. I'm known sometimes. I'm on the radio, TV, I speak to thousands of people and travel and all that. That does not impress my children or grandchildren.
mm-hmm. Well, I think you've made a good point. I think in our culture, we, to some degree, there's a whole host of reasons why fathers may be absent. Some may be laziness or just no regard for the vocation you have as a father, and so just not stepping up to fulfill that role, that vocation you've been given as father. But you're right, there are another whole host of reasons. There might be health reasons. Someone may be incarcerated or death or a number of other reasons. And we're going to talk about the the importance of championship fathering when we come back from the break. We need to take a short break. When we come back from that break, we'll continue our conversation with Kerry Casey, CEO of the National Center for Fathering. I hope you can join us for the rest of the conversation as we're talking about the importance of fathers in changing this culture of fatherlessness in the United States. Stick around for more Faith and Family right after this on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration and action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit CUW.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Clearly, the momentum is with pro-lifers and ending abortion. Even pro-abort media outlets are saying it. Last year, Time magazine said we've been winning the war ever since Roe versus Wade. My friend and great pro-life blogger Jill Stanek compiles many reasons why we're winning. The scores of pro-life state laws passed, pro-abortion infighting, science, the stigma against abortion, and two recent Supreme Court rulings. Others point to Obamacare motivating pro-lifers, the image problem with feminism, and abortion mill closures. Jay Michelson at the Daily Beast said it well. Pro-lifers are sophisticated, smart, and methodical. Jill summed it up by reflecting on America's youth being pro-life. The pro-abort crowd has no rear guard. They killed them.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
In 1939, Lutherans started resettling people displaced by World War II. In 1960, we asked, who else can we help, and opened our service networks to refugees and migrants. As wars and conflicts create the need for asylum and refuge, Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service is still asking, who else can we help? Today, with partners, congregations, and volunteers, we're resettling refugees, reuniting families, and rekindling dreams. You can help. LIRS.org/volunteer.
We live in a brave new world when it comes to infertility medicine, in vitro fertilization, embryo adoption, and assisted reproductive technology. What is the church to do? What comfort can we offer those suffering? LCMS Life Ministry and Concordia Seminary Life Team are sponsoring a free infertility ethics symposium for pastors, seminarians, commission ministers, and parish nurses, November 8th in St. Louis. Space is limited. LCMS.org/life.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. We are talking with CEO of the National Center for Fathering. We're talking with Kerry Casey about the importance of fathers, especially in this time of epidemic fatherlessness in our country. Kerry, before we went to the break, in the first segment, we really covered a lot about this epidemic of fatherlessness and what it means for our country, for our culture. How is the National Center for Fathering responding to that? What are some of the things that you're focusing on to help us make that change?
Yes, quite naturally, as we stated, Andy, before the break, we talked about the research that we have here at the center. And so we like to study it, we like to research it, and to see what the problem is. There is a crisis. We want to scare people straight, by all means. Now, there are dads that are really stepping up. I'm very optimistic in 2014 because there are other organizations, but quite naturally here at Fathers.com, National Center for Fathering, engaging fathers, enriching lives. And so we know that we can tackle this problem, but it's going to take some time and it's going to take a team to do it. It's going to take this great United States coming together. And one thought that came to us is championship fathering. And so through our research, three things, Andy, clearly come out. And that is, of researching thousands of fathers, three things clearly come out. Number one is that they're loving. They love the child and they love the child's mother. Even if they're divorced or never been married to the mom, the research shows is that they really do love the child unconditionally. And so a daddy loves the child. The time, the talk, the touch, the nurturing the child, you know, honoring and respecting the mother, as I stated, it comes out. So in essence, as you love the child, we'll be able to make it, thinking of that first tenet of championship fathering. You love the child. But then number two is that you coach the children, not just on the field, but it clearly comes out that you coach the children. You're involved and you are aware of the child. It's just like my children. I got three grown children, two daughters that are married, and children of their own. Then my son, 31, who works with the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, Marcellus, he has four children. And then we kept having fun. Now we have Chance, who's 17. Chance came to me when he was 10 years old. And he said, Daddy, Marcellus play football. You play football. I don't like football. And I'm thinking, son, you're going to strap on something. Your daddy's roommate at University of North Carolina was Lawrence Taylor, one of the greatest linebackers ever to play the game. And I played in bowl games and all of this, you know. But I didn't go too far in berating him. But then the next day, I had the privilege to speak to the Kansas City Chiefs, and Chance was with me. And some of the players came over to Chance, and they shook Chance's hand. He was 10 years old, and they said, Chance, you're going to play football? You're going to play for the Kansas City Chiefs? You're going to play in the NFL? And Chance was a typical 10-year-old. He looked up at these giants of men and looked at him, and he was honest like a 10-year-old. I don't like football. I'm never going to play football. I don't like and I'm looking at him, son, don't say that. This is daddy's job. They think they're the greatest thing in the world. But anyway, whatever. But then the next day, true story, this happened through a weekend. That Monday, Chance looks me in the eye. He does not move his eyes, and he says, Daddy, do you still like me and love me, although I don't like football? I looked at him, and I held him, and I said, son, if you never touch a ball, Daddy loves you. You're my seed. I thank God for who you are. And so he plays tennis. He's a great singer. He's an excellent artist. Will probably go to school for art. And he's a dancer. And he dances in ways I could never dance, or any NFL player for that matter. But anyway, he is who he is. God has given him a certain bent. So you love your children, you coach your children, and then the third tenet of championship fathering is you model for your children. You don't just preach it, but you model for them. You don't talk as much as I'm talking today. Chance, I said, son, how can Daddy get better? What can I do better in being a better dad? He said, well, Dad, in the morning, just don't say anything. You get up, Daddy, like you're ready to go out to play a game. You're fired up. You've been up early in the morning. You've read the Bible. You've studied. You're excited. You've taken a shower. And when I get up, I don't want to hear all that. And so I have to listen to him. And no matter how great my information is, if a person's not able to receive it or willing to receive it, it falls on deaf ears. So now when I get up in the morning and he gets up, I just look at him. Dad, at least you can say good morning. But anyway, so we maneuver through that. We get to know each other. And so we have some things that we do. But Championship Father, and this is in my book, by the way, entitled Championship Fathering, How to Win at Being a Dad. And you can go to www.fathers.com and get a copy of the book. But Barnes & Nobles and different people have it as well. But anyway, what they love, they coach, and they model. That's how you win at being a dad. And it's really exciting. I saw my dad years ago. We're talking about modeling. Mm-hmm. I remember during the civil rights days, and I saw my dad call the N-word, but I remembered my dad looking down at me, Andy, and he said, "Son, evidently they don't know my name." Mm-hmm. And so he knew who he was as a Christian man, and God gave him his race. And I remembered playing golf a few years ago at Whistling Straits, a nice golf course up in Wisconsin where the pros play. And I was dressed real nice. I went to get my clubs one morning, and then I walked over to get the clubs. And then there was a gentleman. He got out of a nice, sleek automobile. And he came to me, and he said, sir, would you get my clubs for me? And he was thinking I was a caddy. And the people at the golf course there, Andy, they said, no, this is Mr. Casey. He's the CEO of National Center for Fathering. He's playing golf here. They just knew I was going to get upset and go sue the golf course and get money and help, you all's radio station out and everybody else. But anyway, they told him that, he's playing golf here. So the moral of the story is this. I could have gotten upset. I could have been rude. I could say I'm going to sue the golf course, but I couldn't do that because my dad modeled for me when you're called out of your name or when people treat you less than. And my dad modeled it for me. And you got to know who you are. And that's what daddies do with their children. They give the child identity. This is your name. And then also coaching them of how they're gifted a certain way. And then also loving them, even when they drop the ball, even when they do something that's not right, or in some way they do something of breaking the law or whatever. But they love them, but they coach them in how to deal with it and how to get better.
So loving, coaching, and modeling are important aspects of being a championship father. I'm glad you mentioned even loving your children even when they drop the ball. I don't know how many times at youth sporting events, whether it be high school or little kids, hearing parents yell things from the stands that are degrading to the child simply because the child failed at something on the field.
And you make a good point there, Andy, and I tell you this, one great movie, we've been a part of some wonderful movies here like Courageous, another movie we're in, Irreplaceable, that focus on the family. It was in theaters during May, but now it will be out on DVD soon. But go to Focus on the Family website or our website, fathers.com. And you'll be able to see the movie Irreplaceable. But there's another movie that's coming out August the 22nd entitled When the Game Stands Tall. And it's a football movie, but the life lessons that come out in that movie, you will be so thrilled. And it was one, like you stated, because there's a father in the movie, and I'm not taking away from the theme of the movie or the excitement of when you watch it, but there's a father that wanted his son to break records and all that, and he was just so adamant about his son being the star in this type of thing. And he would scream at him, he grabbed him, he was rude to him and said, "You better break that record," and all of this, and the son's like, "Daddy, it's just for you." He said, "You better break that." He was just so rude to the kid. But I remember when I failed at times, when I dropped balls in championship games. I was a part of real life, Andy, the movie Remember the Titans, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And so, but I remember leading up to the state championship game. I was on the team that lost to the Titans in the state championship game. And I dropped a pass. I was a 16-year-old sophomore. I ran the wrong play. It was different things. I was ready to quit. But my daddy was the one that talked to me and said, "Son, you must learn how to deal with disappointment. You're going to fumble the ball sometimes. You're going to run the wrong play. You're going to drop some passes. But, son, your coach couldn't put you right back in the game because you were focusing on what you did wrong rather than forgetting that one or two plays and then running the rest of the plays that it took to win the game." And Daddy said, you were so engrossed in who you were and thinking about yourself rather than thinking about the team and thinking about, rather than worrying about how you look, you could do better in, on the next play and help the whole team win. So he didn't get upset. He didn't raise his voice, didn't scream at me. He didn't fold his arms, look down his nose at me with a scowl or his eyes just piercing through me. A father should open their arms, have a smile at times on their face, or inviting words. Son, daughter, what could you have done better? What were you thinking when you did that? Why are you upset? What can I do to help you feel better or to navigate the opportunity better in how you treat your girlfriend or how you drive your car or how you spoke to your mother? Son, you're going to have to learn how to use yes, sir, and no, sir, and yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am. Don't let people tell you that that's old-fashioned. That's proper etiquette. That's the verb, the type of language that you should use. In fact, you will not get a job if you use some of the language that people live in our, that people use in our culture today. And I'm just going to tell you, no matter how much the culture changes, when people hire in things, they're going to hire people that fit within the corporate or the professional structure. Believe it or not, you don't get in the NFL as a coach if you don't have certain protocol and certain background in understanding the culture.
So what you're saying is, as fathers, our children are watching when we act, when we react. They're paying attention to those things, especially in how we react to them. So
yes.
this loving coaching and modeling certainly yes. are important.
Or how somebody, if somebody cuts you off on the street and your son is sitting next to you or your daughter sitting next to you or a child in the neighborhood, they're in the car, and somebody cuts you off and then you blurt out a profane word or profanity or you shake your fist at them. Right then, we're giving our children the right or the opportunity to say, it's okay to do that. And so while you're doing that, you're not navigating and watching other cars, and you could have a car wreck. Or if you're in the McDonald's and they didn't do the sandwich right, and you get upset and you just go up there and give them your mind over a dollar sandwich, it's not that important. And that person is working there, and they're doing their best on that job, and they just happen to make a mistake. So they're going to feel that they got to be perfect, or if another person is not perfect, you're going to scream at them and berate them and tell them where they're stupid rather than what could they do better or to give them grace. And I believe we can do better. I heard an old man say one time, you can catch more flies with honey than you can with vinegar. And so... But to let people know that we need to love, we need to coach, we need to model for our own children, Andy. But then there are two other tenets of championship fathering, and that is to encourage a child without a dad. And there are children that would just love to have a father call their name. They would just love to have a man, a father figure, to catch ball with them. They would just love to hear another man or father tell them, I love you and that I'm proud of you. There are girls that would love to have a dad that would take them to a father-daughter dance, but they don't have a father figure. So I asked the daddies many times, who are the children in your neighborhood that don't have a dad or father figure? And I looked at my neighborhood, Andy, and I didn't have to go far. In fact, all I had to do was to go next door in my neighborhood where Brett and Kyle and Ryan live with their mother, Gail. And their daddy left when Brett was two. And I'm their father figure. Believe it or not, they call me dad. Are they my color? No, they're not. Did they play college ball? Will not. All of this. But I'm the guy that they come to and put a piece of paper on the windshield. And I know I'm talking like I'm a perfect dad. I'm saving the world and everything I do is perfect. That's not true. All you have to do, I could give you my cell number, my kid's number, and you call some people and they'll tell you my great faults. And I'm far from perfect. But I love it where they put the note on the windshield. I come out in the morning. Dad, can I talk to you today when you come home from work? And I never forget sitting there with young Brett and when his girlfriend broke up with him. It broke his heart. He was devastated. And I remember sitting on the porch with him, giving him a hug, telling him, it's going to be okay. You're going to make it. And he had tears with another man. And we're trained, don't you cry. You're a man. Don't cry. Don't tell people your weaknesses. But this gentleman, he was crying. I held him. And he said, it's terrible, and I love her. And I said, it's going to be okay. How do you know it's going to be okay? I said, because when I was a junior in high school, Chandra broke up with me. I cried. I was hurt. My parents were on vacation. I stayed back home to work out for the next football season. But my daddy called home one day and heard over the phone a little bit of my brokenness. And he knew his son enough that they left vacation early and came back. And he coached me. He loved me. And he coached me. He modeled for me in how to deal with that ache in my heart as a teenager. Now, sometimes we think as men, what's the big deal? Just suck it up. It's okay. Be a man.
Mm-hmm.
And we tell people, don't have emotion. Just do what you got to do. Just tough through it. But sometimes men, women, boys, and girls need to cry. Sometimes we need to scream. Sometimes we need to be upset. Those are real emotions. But when you have a father figure, or grandfather to coach them through it, it's just like today, young Brett, he's not even thinking about this girl that broke his heart a few years ago. We don't even discuss her anymore. He's gotten over it. But then you love, coach, model, encourage a child without a dad. But then you also enlist other fathers. There are daddies that are out there by themselves. And by the way, men don't do well by themselves. You need to have other men around you. You need to have accountability. You need to have people that know you pretty good, that can look you in the eye and tell when you're a little sad, when you're a little depressed, when you're a little down, and can look you in the eye and say, how's it going? What's going on? And you can say, well, I lost my job. Well, I got a bad report at the doctor. Well, excuse me, my bride and I are not on the same page. Well, I might need to change careers because I'm traveling too much and I'm not there for my children as often as I should be. And so there are times, like in football, you get injured. You go to the bench, the trainer comes over, and they nurse you back to health. Sometimes you can go right back in the game. Sometimes you might need to stay out longer and to be healed. And so you got to enlist other dads. And there was a dad in my neighborhood that was ready to go through a divorce. He was having an affair, just to make it plain. But I took a risk, Andy, and I went to his home. And his bride had told me what was going on, and she cried and all that. And so I went to see him. He was shaking. He couldn't even talk to me. He said, I can't talk to you today. I'll talk to you another time. I said, I have your cell phone number, and I'm going to follow up. But anyway, he left his bride. But a year later, he calls me on my cell phone, when I'm in an airport in Washington, D.C., before I was flying back to Kansas City, where we live. And he said, Kerry? I answered my phone. I said, who is this? He said, it's Bob. I'm like, Bob who? He said, it used to be your neighbor. He said, I want to come home. Now, he got out there and thought the grass would be greener on the other side of the fence. But then he realized he had a great bride, and this new woman could not fulfill him. And he literally wanted to know how to come home. And I said, I'll help you. And believe it or not, their marriage seems like it's better than my bride and my marriage now. And they ride off on the Harley Davidson and have fun together. But they're some of our best friends. Their marriage is great. Both of them became Christians through this situation. Now they have their daughter, their only child is married, and they have two beautiful grandchildren.
So enlisting other dads by doing this, you can have that encouragement as iron sharpens iron, that have that support to be a faithful father, to be a faithful husband.
You got it. You said it. That verse you're talking about, as iron sharpens iron, it comes out of James there, and it talks about as iron sharpens iron. And iron sharpens iron. You can't get a feather, and you can't get wood and sharpen a knife. You just said it, and that's what is in the Epistle of James.
Mm-hmm.
That is so true. And so we sharpen one another. And so I have men that I'm CEO, but I got to listen to guys. I got to trust them. And they ask me tough questions, and I got to answer them. If we're going to be buddies, and iron sharpens iron, you don't just go there to have a nice little kumbaya moment every time. You got to ask, how you doing financially? What are you doing with your money? Everybody wants to get rich, but nobody wants to be poor and be good stewards, even if you got a little bit. When much is given, much is required. So a lot of people say, make me rich and I'll know what to do. But God doesn't want to entrust certain things with Kerry Casey until he sees what I can do with a little. And all of us have certain talents, time, talent, and treasure. What are we going to do with those three T's? And so you got to have guys that will love you enough to shoot you straight. Kerry, you're traveling too much.
Mm-hmm.
I saw how you were kind of rude with Melanie the other day. What's going on? Why would you talk to her like that? Why aren't you opening her door for her? And by the way, that's not old-fashioned. That's what we must do. Ladies need to be cherished.
With just about 1 minute left, we're just about out of time. With about a minute left, what does it mean when we are being championship fathers? We know that means great things for children. What does that mean for women too? With just a minute left.
Oh, ladies are proud. They want to have a man that cherishes them. They will be able to be their husband's greatest fan. And as you love your bride, as Christ loved the church, then you will be able to be blessed more by her. The more I serve Melanie, the more I load and unload the dishwasher, the more I make the bed, the more I take the dirty clothes down, I'm supporting her.
Mm-hmm.
And that turns her on. We think we need to buy big rings. I write notes and all that. Well, we got to do all the things you see in the movies. No. Do the basic things that would turn them on. Oh, my goodness. And they would love you more than you ever thought.
We've been talking with Kerry Casey. He is the CEO of the National Center for Fathering and also author of the book Championship Fathering, How to Win at Being a Dad. You can find out more at fathers.com. Kerry, thanks so much for being our guest today on Faith and Family.
Thank you so much for letting me talk as long as I did. God bless.
God's blessings to you as well. Coming up in just a little bit, we've got Moments of Assurance coming up next right here on Worldwide KFUO. Hope you can join us for that and enjoy a great conversation with the Reverend Mark Hawkinson and some great music as well. Stick around for Moments of Assurance up next right here on listener-supported Worldwide KFUO.